Good afternoon, good evening, and good morning, no matter where you are on this beautiful green planet. Welcome to Journeys with JP on Revolution Radio and simulcast with Wolf Spirit Radio through Ever Beyond Radio. So, tonight I have a very special guest who I've been wanting to speak to for several years, ever since I saw a very, very quietly Project Camelot interview. I thought, I really must speak to this lady. So through some of the Project Camelot forum and Avalon forum people, I've managed to get in touch, and we've had a little preamble chat. And so I'd like to welcome onto Journeys with JP, Eva Zemanova. Good afternoon, Eva. How are you?
Good afternoon and evening, everybody from Prague.
So from Prague... What a magnificent place! It's lots of open spaces and squares in Prague, aren't there?
Well, I've just talked to Carrie Cassidy, who has been here for a weekend, and we both think it's pretty crowded, and especially because it's summer, you know, the summer holiday, so it's full of tourists. It's just packed with people, and it can get hot and unpleasant, you know. A place like that, it's not what it used to be. The mystical, magical Prague is still under the stones and the signs and the legends and the traditions. They are buried under the trinkets and
under the veneer of bling, as they call it these days. Sparkly objects and pretty things that aren't really pretty. Not really beautiful, but pretty. So... today we're going to be talking about stuff that happened, well, I mean, if you believe in the illusion of time, a long time ago, you know, a billion years ago can be last week, you know. It's a very odd thing when you're talking about something like this, because in our mainstream society, we are taught that the Earth was this and... you know, it's billions of years old, and suddenly, you know, 6,000 years ago, here's, bam, man, you know, God created. So that's obviously rubbish, right? And then you've got the evolutionists who say, well, you know, we were monkeys and apes, and then we started swinging from the trees and then come down and started, you know, lighting fires and all this stuff. And I believe that's also bollocks. So there's somewhere in amongst all of the myths and legends from all the native lands, from the Native Americans and their stories of the Star Elders, to the Aborigines and the Dogons, who talk about, again, the Star Elders from Sirius and all of these other places. So today, my guest, Eva, is going to tell us a story of something that happened a long time ago, much longer than the time of Egypt. Much longer than the time of Atlantis. Now, people think that Atlantis is a legend, right? To me, it's a reality. It's like last Tuesday. And before Atlantis, there were other civilizations, and one of them was called Lemuria. And eventually, Lemuria and Atlantis got into a war, and stuff happened, and all that stuff. And we basically, you know, the planet basically, as we say, twatted itself, knocked itself out. And we've been suffering from concussion and amnesia ever since, and this is like 13 or so thousand years ago. But before that, even long, long, long time ago, before a million years, before 10 million years, before 100 million years, 500 million years ago, a ship landed. We're going to find out the story of that ship. And to tell that story, good evening, good afternoon, Eva Zemanova. Hello.
I believe in the show upon me, or no, it's not the case.
What's that?
Where to start?
Well, the story that you told to Carrie and to Miles started with what seemed to be on the level of the beings in a routine journey, something that was just normal, or something that happened normally. Do you want to, first of all, do you want to tell us about whose ship it was, who was on it, and what was the journey that you were taking about, and then what happened when you came close to Earth?
Okay, I'll try to cut through the space and time.
Yes, and indeed, you know, take your time. You know, you can speak slowly and build us pictures as you go of the things that you perceive and remember and have understood from other sources and you know, the whole picture that you put together for yourself.
Obviously, I'm going to give a personal, you know, like a hint, personal,
of course,
personal feeling to that. I need to personalize the story. So the beings I met there, or you know, the where I came to this, and when this all happened, and I saw the ship landing or landed on the place here, and it was the time, and I went to Bodh Gaya for the Kala Chakra initiation. That did not happen at the end. It was the 2002 cancelled the initiation, and so these beings they probably are with us, and I knew them from my, like, childhood, from my soul, from my spirit. I think I felt a connection, but I've never seen them in a full form. I never seen how important it is, or how does it relate to our human history. I would have no idea. But then this one night changed everything in my life, and God knows it was a moment that perhaps much was changed for this planet alone, because they, through this memory, they were giving us back a part of our heritage and of our ancestry. And they try to, through this memory, they try to remind us who we are as human beings, where did we come from, that we are not an advanced mammal, that we are not just an advanced mammal, that we are not just an advanced ape, and that we had this completely amazing, wonderful, old, ancient civilization and ancestors in stars, who came here millions of years ago, and they happened to. And then it's important to say where we came from. So we came from fairly far away. So your listeners probably they will more easily relate to names of nearby stars and galaxies. And if we understand that all these neighboring galaxies belong to what's called a Virgo supercluster, then our original civilization was a part of another star cluster. And that is still in another part of universe, as you say, another sector of the universe. And we thought, or the way we understood it, that was a much older universe. Now, if you have different concepts of how does the space evolve or revolve, like a larger concept, many concepts. One I really love is the bubble universe. You know, it's like the bubbles or the eggs of local universes, each evolving its unique characteristics, and them all floating in a still larger sea of space, and so forth. And so this permits the idea of the multiverses and so forth. And the way we would look at it is that our universe, to where we all belong now, has a kind of a center that we now even cannot perceive. It's not like the center of the galaxy. It's not like a big black hole or something like that. But in fact, the center is in complete standstill. In the center of that universe, the nothing ever moves or changes. It's where the time and space they come to still, and around this center, the universe still happens to be highly organized, symmetrical, and it has almost like a perfect symmetry. It's not what we see commonly or experience where we are now, but back in our home, the way the suns and all the other bodies behave themselves was like a clock in a way. It was like almost like you imagine this kind of this perfect atomic clock. So they were perfectly rhythmical, and they had this beautiful like range spectrum of frequencies that enabled stable environments, and then they were able to host or provide an environment for evolution or existence of intelligent life, long-lived life that did not life forms, beings as we were, who did not have to struggle with the environment as we know of here. So basically, our ancestors, they came from this very advanced environment. So what does it say? We are not really used to all the struggle we now experience down here. And we are not used to the pain. We are not used to work so hard. We are not used to the process of aging. You know, where we came from, we did not have all these diseases and all these fights and wars and conflicts, internal or external. So compared to here, the idea survives in us like, I think, a kind of metaphysical heaven or a memory of that perfection. It is something that we all carry within us and we all can relate to in our dreams. So this is where our civilization came to being, where it was born in the millions of years of our time. And then when and after we developed far space travel and we were exploring various planets and evolution waves of life and how it was seeded to different environments and our sister civilizations, all these old civilizations. And we saw them coming and going and so forth. So on one of these journeys that was like directed somewhere even further than we are now, on this planet, this solar system, where we went to visit a kind of sister civilization who were in need and who were desperate to for contact with others like them, like us. And on the way back, the mothership we had experienced some kind of error in its almost perfect system of artificial intelligence. And there, you know, I think it's a story of there are many of the sci-fi stories that that kind of hint on the theme of what happens to the super perfect computer when it suddenly encounters an error it cannot solve immediately. So that's the whole problem with artificial intelligence, that it, when it gets stuck with itself, you can't really help it out.
Man,
because
it gets
it's so
stuck.
smart.
Like
It's
when
so
Skype crashes.
Yeah. So fast and so smart that it only agrees to do it itself, and we are not able to interact with it in major way from outside, because it was constructed in that way. It was made that way, and so on that account, the ship was searching for a safe place to rest us, and it happened to land on this ancient Earth, on this very planet. I don't know how long is that. Like, in the memory of the event, I got a number like 80 million years ago, but I suppose it's really an approximation. Because who knows how long ago it was, considering there was no advanced life here. And the way we saw this planet was like a kind of hospitable but rough environment. If you imagine wild planet, like imagine landing somewhere in the middle of Utah in a sandstorm or something like that. There is nobody around 1,000 miles. So what are you going to do? So you can
so it's
start
not
walking.
Convenient for the shops, for instance. It's very hard to get some fresh milk or something for your tea.
Yeah, no, nothing
correct. For your ET. Let me just jump in and sort of dive into a little bit of what you've been saying. So the group of people were basically, you know, I'm going to call them people. Do you have a name for the race that we can call them, like a handle? It doesn't matter if that's their real name or approximation.
I would certainly like my name for them and us was that we were beings, you know. But I use the name people like a common term.
Yeah.
But they were beings, and they were. I know that they were known as peacemakers and elders. They did not hold on to particular name for themselves or for the civilization, because they were known to be the elders of the civilized universe. So, right.
And I suppose in that way, they don't speak using words and names like we do. There's a symbolic transference of telepathic information, boom, like that, isn't there?
Yeah, we communicated between us mostly telepathically, and we would understand even telepathy is still a form of energy transfer. So we would also have a senses quite like you can describe human senses, but we were able to read information on more subtle frequencies, on more subtle levels, receive and transmit information between us on those levels, even in great distance. But of course it had its limits, like its physical limits and properties, quite like everything in formed universe, in the universe of forms. has its limits.
So look, as a computer programmer for many years, I'm interested in the AI aspect of it, and also the fact that the AI came across what we'd call a bug. You know, that it came to a point when its programming did not model the universe around it. It was in a place where it didn't know. There was a place it didn't recognize. It wasn't familiar at all with the environment that it found itself in. Gravitationally, as you say, you know, it fell into the gravity well. So, number one, Eva, can you talk a little bit about this gravity well? Because I remember you mentioned it very briefly, that it's like if you're going in the sea and there's a mountain under the sea that is just like about 50 feet below the surface of the water, and you need to know that that's going to happen, otherwise you're going to be torn apart by the top of the hill as you go across it. So is there a kind of galactic equivalent of a buoy or you know, some sort of indicator to say, don't go near here, there's a great big gravity well, or is it a trap?
Definitely, there is both. So we like the technology we had, and the ship was flying was pretty amazing compared to all standards. If you hear of the other I don't know, advanced visitors we get, even they don't have such a good technology, so they could fly so far, or that they would dare to fly so far, because indeed space is full of traps and fields that are hard to predict. It's almost like if you talk about the sea and the seawalls, they would tell you, right, or maybe one of them, that they would tell you that no matter how well prepared you are, then you are always facing a challenge with the sea, right? So here we are also, it's always possibly a challenge, even with the most perfect technologies, just daring to go too far to the unmapped universe. And we knew of the seas, that of the quality of the space can vary, and the gravity fields, they can accelerate or slow your journey, or they can take you somewhere a little bit else than you really wanted to go. And even if you have really good sensors and the technology, as we discussed that together previously, that we were actually rather cutting through space, which is like probably called a hyperspace travel or something like that. So we were kind of repelling the space, because space is not empty thing. It's all kinds of space particles that are arranged to those fields of energy, and those fields like waves, they go around larger bodies of galaxies and star clusters, and even like undifferentiated sectors from where the energy becomes condensed, and eventually it gives birth to a new star or a new black hole and a new type of universe. So we were flying through all this, but there can be traps. So definitely the gravity force and the forces, they can be tricky. And there is one thing that I've deduced about this particular solar system and this planet, that it has a gravity loop, and it has something to do maybe even with this planet alone. Maybe a very long time ago, it could have been an old star dad then turned to a satellite. Oh, definitely all planets originate from the star itself, from the central star itself, but it could have also been another star originally, who dwarfed and cooled down and whatever the case is, and then it burst to pieces that became satellites, whatever is the case. It would explain the kind of interjection of forces and the emergence of this gravity loop, and because but the ship was searching for a habitable place, for a place to rest for a time being, and it ended up here. And it did not feel safe, or it could not lift itself back to space immediately. So it left us stranded here on this place for a really very, very long time. Yeah, and I did also, from what I have seen, I did the origins of the ancient mankind, or its predecessor, or one of its predecessor, to this accident and to this event.
Thank you. So the gravity loop fascinates me. And also what you were saying. Now, there are stories from the Hollow Earth, the Agarthan, say that there's a star in the center of our planet. A tiny little star they call the Smoky God. And that illuminates the inside of our planet like a bauble. Like a Christmas tree decoration, and that we're really kind of clinging to the hull of a big spaceship on the outside here. That, there's a lot more inside than there is on the outside and these things. But anyway, beyond that, this gravity loop was something that the ship couldn't understand and couldn't deal with, and said, "Oh, just let me think about this for a while," or something like that. And so, what happened? So, I'm interested in what happened to the personality of the AI. Did it go crazy? Is it still there? I mean,
No,
is it how? Has it escaped? Is it somewhere in the internet?
the AI is trapped in the ship, and it doesn't, fortunately for us, it does not have a personality. So our ancestors were like wise and benevolent to that degree. They would not be able, or they would not create something that would endanger them under any circumstances. So that's the very purpose of an artificial intelligence, as it should be. It has to serve the living beings. Under no circumstances are the living beings going to serve the artificial intelligence. So it's completely the same. It's the same entity, is the same intelligence as it were, and it's forever trapped with the ship. And my idea about the consequence of those events is twofold. Either it flew back at some later point of time and so forth, or it remained deep underground in the earth, in the area where we landed, because it was heavy. It was kind of super heavy, so naturally it sunk in the sands. It sunk through the geomagnetic events, there were all these tectonic shifts and earthquakes and how the earth formed. So if it's down there, it's still counting its time, and it's talking to us. So from what I saw in Bodh Gaya is that we are still connected mentally to the ship, at least those of us who remember the this part of history or the events. And the interesting phenomenon about, you know, the whole story of Bodh Gaya is story of Buddhas, and it's not only the last Buddha, Buddha Shakyamuni, who lived, I don't know, 2,500 years ago, but according to Buddhism, he was about the sixth Buddha. The previous Buddha from him was Buddha Kashyapa, and there are still some forgive me, there are some still some remains of this Buddha Kashyapa preserved in some sacred locations like Mongolia. And I suppose that Buddha Kashyapa, he lived at the time of Lemuria. I've studied some records, like some comparing the data and so forth. So if the Buddhist cosmology and datings have anything to say to this, then Buddha Kashyapa lived maybe 100,000 or 150,000 years ago. And so these kind of Buddhas are coming after long time, and they really, what they do is they say they turn the wheel of Dharma. So they sit, they turn things in the right direction for the humanity to continue forwards. Otherwise, we keep getting stuck, and we are sort of turning in a loop. It's what they call the samsara, the wheel of birth and death and repetition of events, and we are just going through the same circumstances again and again till we clear all the mistakes, all the wrongdoings, all the deeds and misdeeds. And because there are so many, if you count all the people taking part in that, so it would take infinite time to fix it all. So what we need each time is a kind of powerful fix and direction and navigation. Okay, guys, you need to walk forwards, not backwards, not in the round. So these Buddhas, it's said in the Buddhist scriptures that all of the Buddhas attained the supreme enlightenment in Bodh Gaya. So that's an interesting detail. So it would mean that after some time, everybody goes back to Bodh Gaya, and they meditate there, and they connect to this field of the mothership and the field that was left there by the impact of our landing and so forth, and connects to this artificial intelligence. And perhaps at that time we are also better able to connect to other cosmic intelligences, and out of sudden we see the whole picture, we see the bigger picture, we see much larger picture, and ourselves from that perspective we see how small we are in this particular time frame. But I believe it perhaps gives us a motivation, it gives us reason and to keep struggling
to
forward.
Keep pushing on. So, all right, so let's just take up a few of those very interesting nuggets there. So, fantastic what you talk about the Buddhas. There is this thing that I read the Alice Bailey material, and one of the things that Dwal Kul points out is that he's quoting from ancient books that their age has been lost in the mists of time. But what it sounds like is that this Buddha that you're talking about, the Lemurian Buddha, let's say, he's the one who wrote that ancient commentary. Is that right? And also, you said the loop of karma. Is the loop of karma connected with the loop of gravity by any chance?
Oh, definitely. So, you know, for that we would have to go to the beginning itself and when everything started.
Okay, shall we use the time machine? Should we go back in the time machine?
I do. If you have one, it's completely ideal.
Hang on, let's just let's see if I can get it going. There we go. There we go. So,
Yeah.
how far back are we today? How far back are we now?
So like 80 million years only.
Just 80 million years, a mere last Wednesday. And so, can you describe, I mean,
Yeah,
80 million
you can see
years?
almost nothing around. That's just those rocks and trees
Trees.
and.
Okay, so we got trees. We have bracken. Do we have grass?
Yeah, and then all the plant life as we know it.
So the plant life is fully developed, and do we have things like flowers and blossoms and stuff like that?
Yeah, it depends on weather really, but the weather is wild.
Oh.
Like expect the weather to be really stormy.
Okay, so it's not a peaceful time like a sort of idyllic paradise time. It's really quite a turbulent time.
It's an ancient time and the weather is wild, yeah. So there we are. The explorers of the space. But we have just landed and what's happened? You know, you have mentioned the gravity problem.
About the gravity.
So some of us happen to step out to this unusual gravity field of the Earth, and no matter how much we enjoy the sights, what happened to our biological organisms, or at least some of them, not everybody, is that they got dwarfed. You know, they turned to Earthlings, and it was a cataclysm. It was a disaster. The exodus of our race, you know, all the cultural exodus we feel so grave about these days, and leaving one country and coming to another country, and then the cultures are dying. So they
Refugees.
are a remnant of this original situation, and this destruction of our full potential as space civilians and as the elders. So at least part of us turn to these earthlings. And what I probably forgot to mention about the part of the universe where we find ourselves now is that this one is a kind of young and uneven universe that keeps like crumbling. out and spilling its debris and so forth. So it's not really a well-shaped universe. And whatever our own biological properties were, so we were suddenly subjected to the forces of this crumbling young universe. And some suffered not only like depression and not only a post-traumatic stress disorder and all these kind of things. They really lost the memory. They suffered deep amnesia. They did not remember who they were, and their body were challenged to a shape they could not recognize. You know, they could not, they had to reconcile with who they were all of a sudden, and they could not recognize us who remained in the original shape, and they could not really relate to us. So it was really a huge trauma for everybody who was present. And these people, these first Earthlings, they developed to in many various ways. So they were not one kind of people, they were individuals completely, as we know the humanity to be at the moment, like evolving through individual pathways or individual genetic pathways and so forth. So these people too, they were different and various. And later on to jump through a time, and after they recovered and started recovering, they could not really, and we had no way how to put them back. You know, even with those amazing technologies we had, we were just staring at what has happened, and there was no precedence, and there was no remedy we could apply just to put them back to shape. And so we had to leave them in that biological shape as they were, fleshy beings, and later also mortal beings, and who developed their own minds. They developed completely their own identity. They started to call themselves the people of the earth, the earthlings. And they really developed ideas of God, and they felt the guilt for what has happened, and they thought that it was some kind of punishment of God, things like that, and everything that happened later had the roots or has roots in this very old and complicated story.
Wow. So Eva, let me just drop in here, because you've laid out some very, very interesting memes, as we say. The idea that they were guilty, the idea that they felt something had gone wrong and that it was their fault. These all sound like what we call religion.
Exactly. They were the very roots of religion and all religions on earth. But the point is that there was really no guilt and no reason for a guilt, because there was no one in the universe responsible for that error. But it's simply a psychological, like the psychological logic.
It was an accident, yes.
Is when you have no answer and no explanation for a situation, and the situation so existentially deep that it shapes your fate to Robinson Crusoe out of sudden, and you don't know why. How did you deserve this? So you have to invent some explanation or apology for what has happened. So I think they were searching for an idea. They are searching the words religions and prophets. They are offering an idea after idea since, as we know that.
So in a way, religions are trying to explain the enigma of what happened without really knowing the story of what happened, because, you know, it starts becoming personal. You know, people make it personal about personalities, like people talk about the personality of Jesus. He's like this, and this is what we want, you know, and it becomes personal. It is no longer about the spirit being that we are inside, which we're trying to grow. From what I understand, we're trying to grow back into that being that landed in Bodh Gaya. Is that the idea of evolution?
Yeah, and I believe that basically we are going there as a humanity. We are regrowing back. But what's there are a couple of opposing forces, like our first enemy in that battle were the physical forces. It was not any sort of living enemy, you know, not any entity. It was simply the physical forces.
The elemental energy.
The elementary forces we were subjected to as human beings that put us and our very intelligence and our capacity to think and to explain reality around us in more sophisticated ways. So our intelligence was kind of dwarfed. And since then, of course, life is so miraculous, life is so powerful, it always finds a way. So, you know, even if you beat us on head with a hammer, and still at the end someone will look up, he'll still be alive and
look at grass that grows through concrete. Yes, indeed. So this is fascinating. We've got.
But and then there is the problem of people who were beaten. I mean, proverbially,
yeah.
on the head so much, they really lost character.
Yeah.
You know, and our genetic potential and everything that we somehow developed due to this planet was affected by this strong physical trauma. And so it also contains lots of mistakes and potential to weaknesses, potential to mutate to different forms. And we of course need the mutability, we need the variables so we can try, I mean our biological nature can try to find ways around the difficulty to hear and I believe that the body of humanity with all these billions of members is basically trying to work it out best as possible and find the perfect model. So
yeah.
Far we were never able to it was not we. We are not, nobody is doing it consciously. It's the same mother nature doing it through us. So it's looking for evolving us the way that we should be the best to be able to adapt, to hear, to survive and function in our best capacity. And so even the future humans will be able to lift themselves back to space and fly back home because it's what we are meant to do one day.
Mm-hmm. So this is very interesting because one of the stations along my path in the last few weeks, you know, I first of all, you know, was feeling down into this Lyran thing and realizing that through the big trauma of having to escape from whatever was raiding and everything like that, all of these traumas that we experience, once we get over them, we then have what I call superpowers, where we have a super sensitivity, because when we were tiny, we blocked it off. So when we regain it, that sensitivity is ultra keen, because it's been working so hard, like the plant growing up through the concrete. It's been working so hard despite the fact that it's been completely suppressed. So it's just like if you want to make dandelions to grow to eat like lettuce, you know, mm-hmm. dandelions is you put them on a bucket so they have no light at all and they force themselves up. Even despite the fact that there's no light. And that, I believe, this is like the human experience. This is what we're going through. We put ourselves through the mincer so that we can reconstitute ourselves and make new burgers out of ourselves.
It's what we are doing, like biologically, reconstituting ourselves of completely new level of matter. So, you know, we have to, at the end, we have to become the master scissors here. You know, the ones who happen to win over the hardest matter and that we were not familiar with previously, the force that we were, that was foreign to us, that was kind of too brute, too dense to work with as we were originally, because the level of density where we came from was lighter, and we never had to deal with this type of force, this type of elemental structure. So we would not approach it, or we were not attracted to it, and simply we did not have to. But now we have to, and the life eventually will win, and we will find we are finding a way around this. So the great people, the great humans are through sciences and everything, they are finding their own definitions that fit perfectly for this local model of time space. And once we are able to define it correctly and work with the forces and conquer the brute force, like crack the brute force and perfect the shape of the elements of the matter we deal with, then we will master the environment and we are free. But it won't be sooner than that, I suppose.
Well, I hope it's that, these things can go up like, we used to talk about the hockey stick graph, going up like that with global warming, which is rubbish. But our evolution, I think, goes like that. Really, even at this moment when, in time, these last few days, these last few weeks, certainly people around me have been having insights and understandings of new concepts that perhaps were unavailable before. It does seem to me to be a new wave of like a refreshing wave of intelligence that seems to be coming somewhere from the cosmos.
Well, I think of it as kind of quantum leap, a loop. Oh, I mean leap.
Well, quantum leap. I mean, this is a loop. We are talking loopiness here. And perhaps
maybe
it's something to do with it.
Yeah, it's the octave, like you change the oo to the e.
Yes, indeed. Mm. Indeed. Mm. Because everything is harmonic. Atoms are harmonic. Atoms are geometric. The way, things put together, what they call these things, platonic solids, are the structures of the nuclei.
I have a crystal. The same thing in a crystal.
Yes, I've got the crystal ones, and these are lapis lazuli. Look at this.
Yeah, lapis. There is mine.
Yes, very pretty.
Should be that one.
We're showing each other our crystals. Oh yeah, there you go. There's so we're showing each other. That is our dodecahedron. So Evan's got a crystal one made of quartz, and this is one made of lapis lazuli. Hang on, is that dodecahedron? Yeah. Dodecahedron has 12 triangular sides. An icosahedron has 20 pentangular sides. Is it 20? It's like loads. No, maybe 10. I don't know what this is. Which one's this? Anyhow, it's the icosahedron and a dodecahedron. One of them. Dodecahedrons have got 12 sides, and icosahedron's got 20. So we're coming up to the top of the first hour, I just wanted to let's sum up. So the beings coming on a routine kind of trip got caught in a gravity well. The artificial intelligence that was flying the ship for them, because there's no navigator in real ships. They don't have it. It's not like a steamship, Star Trek is like a steamship. There's a navigator and a guy turning the wheel and all that stuff. But we don't have that. It's just like maybe somebody sitting in. Oh yeah, there you go. Maybe somebody sitting in the console in a single chair saying, "Okay, home now," and then the ship does the rest. What seemed to happen is that the ship got caught in our solar systems and the Earth's gravity loop. It had never come across it. and it decided that it was going to land and see if it could run some self-diagnostics. And that was over 80 million years ago or more. The beings that came off the ship, who were originally light beings, suddenly fell into a condensed state like a dwarf. And of course, you know, if your brow center is like 12 feet up in the air, and now you're the middle of your head is now like 2 feet up in the air, then you're not going to have the psychic connections anymore. Your chakras are going to be all completely disaligned. Obviously, there's a load of disconnection. There's a load of trauma there. This is another human birth trauma that I believe is part of the whole trauma-based. The reason that we're able to be mind-controlled is because of these traumas that happened in our long-distant past, and that's why I'm interested in healing them and helping them to heal on the whole world, because then we won't be able to be fooled. We won't get fooled again. So, enjoy the short commercials, and we'll be back in a few minutes' time. Thank you very much.